Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. It's the 6th of February 2025. Looks like a nice sunny day. Let's hope it stays that way. We are going to be heading to the farm shop to get our weekly supply of food and whatever other bits and pieces that we need. And I've got a little nick on my thumb that just needs, yes, I just need to give it a quick clip with the old nail clippers. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't look like there's any chemtrails in the sky, so that's very good. Just nipping up into the bathroom. I hope you're well and doing good stuff. Yesterday, funny old day yesterday, didn't manage to do any writing at all. I had an interview to do in the morning. Let's just chuck this nail away. Bloody Windows Update. Windows Update does this all the time, and it's a ruddy nuisance, I can tell you. Because it reset the channel of my studio microphone. I didn't notice, because normally everything's just, you switch it on and it just works. And I had this lady who was very nervous, and I was trying to sort of pacify her, get her in the mood, ready to do the interview. And she was quite nervous to begin with. So when we did it all, I hadn't noticed that my microphone hadn't recorded. Fortunately, the channel on which all her audio was coming in on had been recorded. So I had her answers and her visuals, but I was mute. And now some people might say that that's the advantage. We don't need to hear any more of him. But of course I needed to set up the interview, and I had a few questions to ask her. And they were all silent because she answered the questions. So I thought, oh gosh, what do I do? And I didn't want to go back and say, oh sorry, I've cocked it up, can we do it again? And when I told her what had happened, I said, don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to do it again. And she actually text back saying, oh, I'm so pleased I haven't got to do it again. And it would have been unfair because it was my error. Luckily, it had her sound. So I just edited her stuff into one response as best as one could. I didn't spend a huge amount of time on that. In the old days, I used to edit out all the questions when I used to do the corporate videos asking testimonials, and you'd edit out all the questions anyway and just have one response. So it was just a bit like throwing back to those days, really. But I recorded and topped and tailed the hello and welcome to the show and goodbye and thanks for all the fish. So that was the nature of that. So, but that all took a little extra time, and then uploaded and got it out and scheduled it and various things. So that was a lot of that. And then our friend Neil popped round, who brings kindling. And I always invite him in for a cup of tea because he's very generously offering some kindling, a couple of big bags of kindling and some odd bits of wood, which I think is from his son's firm that they don't need. So he brings this about once a month or something. And so, of course, an hour went by chatting to him. And then I got to when he went, and of course it was cold, I lit the fire. And then I was... Well, time was just ticking on, and I thought, oh, right, OK, I need to get on. And I had some other little things to do, which I did. And then I wanted to do some drawing as well. And I did some designing of the cover for the book from an idea I wanted just to sort of mock up. So by the time I did all that, it was then five-ish. And Julia was going to be heading on her way. I had to light the Essie. And, you know, we made a casserole, which was lovely. And so in the end, yeah, no writing was done. But that's, you know, that's the way it is, isn't it? Some days events take over, don't they? And all of that. Now, somewhere, and in the evening, we read a little bit more of R.F. Delderfield. Still haven't had the delivery. I've ordered, I think, 4 R.F. Delderfield books, one from this series that we're reading, and another saga with the Swan family. So if anybody's heard that one. I'd be interested to know if you've read that one. I can't remember off the top of my head what it's called. I've got one book of that, but really just like his style. As I say, I did read the To Serve Them All Their Days probably 10 years ago, but I think I lost interest in that towards the end. I don't think I actually got towards the end of it. And I did read another one, which was based down in Devon somewhere, in a cove, a photographer, I forget what that was called now, and it was good, and it was to do with a photographer who has an affair with somebody, and they get stuck in a cove, and a number of things happen, but it was good, but not. But then, you know, I think one's tastes and one's experience in life changes. You can go back to a book and really enjoy it. The first time you may not have enjoyed it as much. Does that make sense? I suppose it does make sense, but is that your experience, I suppose, is what I'm actually asking. So let's have a look at Kilvert's diary today and see if there's any thing. So the 6th, I think we're at the 6th, and so here's at one from 1871, I think it is, and it's the 6th, it's a Monday back in 1871, and he says, "I looked out at dawn. The moon was entangled among light clouds in the north and made a golden maze, a network across which the splendour poplars swayed and bowed themselves with a solemn and measured movement in the west wind. The afternoon was so beautiful that I walked over to Broad Meadow to see old David Price again. David Price's young, good-humoured-looking, slatternly wife opened the door to me. The old man was in bed and weaker than when I saw him last. Price said, 'One day a lady was walking on the hill in Flintshire when she met Prince Caradoc, who wanted to be rude with her, but she spurned him, whereupon he drew his sword and cut off her head. And a monk coming by at the moment clapped her head back on again, and she lived 15 years afterwards.'" Well, there you go. How about that was the, that was it. He wanted to be rude with her. "I want to be rude with you." "Oh, I don't know about that." "Oh, well, in that case, off with your head. Meanwhile, cup hands, here comes Cadbury's, stick the head back on, and 15 more years you have." So quite bizarre, really. Quite bizarre. It's cold still. It is, it's February. I nearly said it's, well, what do you expect? It's January, but it isn't January, of course. It is February. I did get into reading The Eustace Diamonds, which was an Anthony Trollope book some years ago. And I think I read a bit to you once. Quite amazing, Trollope, how he was a postman, as far as a postmaster. But he used to write in the evenings, because they didn't have television, so they could write for ages. "The box had been found, and a portion of the fragments were brought into the room while the party was still there at breakfast. Lizzie was not in the room, but the news was at once taken up by her crab stick, together with a pheasant's wing and buttered toast. In the recess beneath an archway running under the railroad, not distant from the hotel above, 150 yards, the iron box had been found. It had been forced open, so said the sergeant of police, with tools of the finest steel, particularly made for such a purpose. The sergeant of police was quite sure that the thing had been done by London men who were at the very top of their trade. It was manifest that nothing had been spared. Every motion of the party had been known to them, and probably one of the adventurers had travelled in the same train with them. And the very doors of the bedroom at the hotel had been measured by the man who had cut the bolt. The sergeant of police was almost lost in admiration. But the superintendent of police, whom Lord George saw more than once, was discreet and silent. To the superintendent of police, it was by no means sure that Lord George himself might not be fond of diamonds, of a suspicion flying so delightfully high as this, he breathed no word to anyone, but simply suggested that he should like to remain the companionship of the party. If Lady Eustace could dispense with the services of the tall footman might be found useful at Carlisle. It was arranged, therefore, that the tall footman would remain, and the tall footman did remain, though not with his own consent. What I find fascinating about people like this, Anthony Trollope, is, as I say, they didn't have television, they didn't have computers, they didn't have spell checkers. They had a dictionary, of course. And he wrote, he had nothing else much to do, and it wrote by gas or candlelight back then of an evening. I'd like to find out more about him, really. I'd like to find out more about how they, the process of writing, not so much what they wrote, I mean, you can read that, but the process of writing. What was his process? In longhand? Didn't probably have a typewriter, I don't suppose. And writing in longhand, and I think about how I write, very amateurish compared to that. And I suppose if you're doing it all the time, you're improving. I mean, what's her face? The Frankenstein, Mary Shelley author. I bought the book, The Last Man, because one of my interviews claimed that he was the last man. I don't know what I've done with it. It's not immediately to hand. And I did start to read it. And apparently she was like 22, 23 when she wrote that. She was about 18, I think, when she wrote Frankenstein. And you just think, how is it, you know, possible that somebody of that inexperienced age is able to write so experiencedly? And she was writing, The Last Man is set in 20, it's either 2080 or 2180. Of course, there's no such things as computers and things. People are still going around on horse and cart. She wrote that in whenever it was, 1870 or 1845 or whenever it was. And it was projected to be like 200 years hence. And of course, they had no idea that the world would be like it is today. But it's fascinating to read it. I didn't read all of it. I got a little bit bored in the end. But it's, you know, I just find it fascinating that people are able, and it's huge, you know, it's, there's loads and loads of words and pages, and I just find that very curious, really. But then what else were they doing, you see? They could concentrate the mind and write, whereas now we're so distracted, it's very difficult, it seems to me. I'm running around doing lots of things. And then there's all the thought processes of what the story is. I take my hat off to these people who wrote in that fashion, that they could dedicate themselves to sitting down, probably at a desk in longhand, writing in books. And then I presume they would hand them over to somebody else who's got to type them up. And then what about the old printing people who had to find each letter by hand? It must take them forever to print a page. And did they do them one page at a time and go, how many copies are we going to print? We're going to print 100 copies. So they'd print 100 pages of one page, then set up the platen with the next load of text. I mean, it must have, you know, you've got a 300, 400 page book. I mean, just one of those pages must have taken a day, surely, to set up with all the different letters, and you're checking each sentence and making sure it's right. Reading it, remember, back to front, as they set these letters into the platen, onto the, you know, the typeset, on the, not typeset, well, it is a kind of typeset, but the, I forget what they call them, the letters on the little steel or iron bits of metal, whatever you know, square blocks. And it must have taken a day to just get a page, 300 odd words, set up, and then you print them. So if you've got a 300 page novel, That's 300 pages. It's 300 days, isn't it? 300, it's like a year's work, effectively, I would imagine. It couldn't be quick. But there you are, anyway, so that's my thoughts on all of that. Well, I'm going to leave it there because we've got to get on and I've got to get to the farm shop. Julia's got to go to her parents this morning and we've got to get to the farm shop and back before specific time. So we're on a clock today. And also, I want to get in the van and ride up to the farm shop before the chemtrailers ruin the sky and dim us down again with their evil dimming technique, which they use every bloody day. So thank you for listening if you did, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Take care. Bye for now.